surface of this topic in 1 hour. So today we've tried to prepare an overview of dairy farming and marketing. And we will continue our coverage of dairy with interviews with other farms, other experts, and as well as marketing firms on shows in the future. So we're going to get started with the interviews that we have for our show today. Our first interview is with Steve Hadcock from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia County. Our intern from SUNY Cobleskill, Aaron Myra, sat down with Steve last month to discuss his work with dairy farmers.
Hi, this is Aaron Myra, and today we're interviewing Steve Hadcock, the Cornell Cooperative Extension Regional Dairy Specialist.
How have you worked with dairy farmers throughout your career with Cornell Cooperative Extension?
I've worked in a variety of different ways in my educational responsibility were dairy cattle management and farm business management. So under dairy cattle management, I could work on more of the herd areas such as nutrition, record keeping, a fair amount with ventilation or farm structures as well associated with it. And also I've done educational programs on reproduction efficiency, heifer management, and so on. So kind of covered that area. On the farm management side of it, worked with business analysis. We have, for over almost 60 years now, we've had the Dairy Farm Business Summary Program, where farmers that are interested can share their records, their financial records, with an educator, and it's all confidential. And we collect that information, and then from that, we prepare a report about the financial picture of their farm business. So over the years, we've done that with quite a few farms in the county, and it's a good management tool because it allows them to use financial figures to make plans for the future for their farm business. And also on a little bit with on the farm management side, have worked on business transfer, estate planning, some on taxes, but also a fair amount with ag districts, ag value assessment, farm structure exemptions, and so on.
What have you noticed as some of the trends in the dairy industry throughout the time you've been involved with it?
Trend has been the dairy industry is a commodity business in general, and a lot of that is due to the fact that we produce more milk than the residents of Columbia County and local area could drink, so we have to export the milk. So not everyone could get into, say, bottling milk and peddling it or selling it locally. And the fact that being said, then being a commodity product being produced here wholesale, the external market forces, basically supply and demand, have had a big impact on the number and size of the farms. Columbia County has tended to be like a lot of other farms in New York, or mirrors a lot of what has happened in New England and in the Northeast, in that the number of farms has declined, yet the size of the farms has increased. Back when I started, I would say that the average size herd in Columbia County was probably around 70 cows, 80 cows, and now it's well over 100 cows in the almost 30 years that I've. But the number of farms, we had around 200 and plus farms, now we're down to about 35 farms. A big farm back then was 300-400 cows. A big farm for us locally now, or our biggest farm, is 1,200 cows. But even looking nationally, that's in some respects a small farm now, with some farms now with 10, 15, 20, 30,000 cows, not necessarily all on the same farm, but are being managed by the same farm entity on many farms maybe in the same geographic area. Because of the cost price squeeze that we've gone through several times, some farms have been more creative in how to generate income for their farms. A couple of them, especially the larger farms, have started to do custom work. They have purchased equipment of size that they can do their own crops in a timely fashion, but then still be able to do custom work for their neighbors, which to some extent is a win-win situation. Others are putting up more crops and more feed than what their animals need, and anticipation possibly growing larger, but on the other hand, they're providing a service by selling their crops to their neighbors or to other farmers. Some have developed a retail milk market as well. Hawthorne Valley has been doing it for years and years, but we've had some others that have started up within the last 15, 20 years and are went through the process of getting developing their own bottling plant or leasing a bottling plant to be able to produce their sell their own milk, which means that they're capturing some of the retail dollar that way. What we've seen in other parts of the, especially in eastern New York, not so much here in Columbia County, is artisan cheese or artisan dairy product production. Again, Hawthorne Valley has been doing that for years. We also have another farm that's relatively new that's making cheese locally, but south of us and to the north of us, there are quite a few artisan cheesemakers as well that are selling their products locally and in the city.
What have you seen as some of the negative impacts on farmers because of the price squeeze and costs increasing?
I would say that it's back just about the time I started. In extension, we had up until that point had experienced a period of a fair, relatively stable dairy prices. They may not have been the greatest, but at least dairy farmers were fairly assured of what they were going to get for their milk. That changed in the early 80s when we had a farm crisis and farm income, but then in the mid 80s the federal government changed how the milk pricing structure, and that changed things dramatically then, so that instead of seeing modest swings in the price of milk, we've seen some pretty dramatic swings in the price of milk over the last 10, 15 years, which in turn makes it very difficult for dairy farm owners to be able to predict to some extent what their income, or to kind of rely on what their income might be for, and kind of if they want to look at it like a 5-year projection, it's somewhat difficult to do that, not really knowing what you're going to be getting maybe in a year, let alone 3 to 5 years for your milk. And the other thing is, we've seen some volatility and some spikes in the input costs that farmers have for producing their crops and milk and so on. But we experienced a pretty significant spike in 2008, and it looks like again we're going to see a big spike in 2011, mainly due to two things: the price of corn going up dramatically again, and energy costs climbing back up again. So volatility is one of the areas that farmers, dairy farmers, and all farmers to some extent have to learn how to, it's a control or not necessarily control, but how they can work with it.
Yeah. What do you feel are some of the current issues that dairy farmers are facing, and how can they deal with those issues?
To follow up, I think there are some tools, risk management tools that dairy farmers can use. They can, and some farms are using them already. As far as on the input side, we have farmers that are forward contracting for diesel fuel, or for grain or for fertilizer or whatever. So that they may not be happy with the price, but at least they know what it is, and it could be locked in for a 6-month or even a year's time. So they know, even though it's more than maybe they want to pay, but at least it's locked in and they know how much they have to pay and can make budgeting decisions based on that. As far as on the income side, there are some things that they can do and programs that they can sign up through Risk Management Administration that could possibly help them to, again, they may may not make as much money, but at least they would know how much money they're going to make with their, for their milk by future doing some milk futures and forward contracting on milk price as well. So that helps to take some of the volatility out of the current situation and help farmers be able to make some management decisions on a day-to-day basis.
How do you feel about the future of the dairy industry in Columbia County and the surrounding area?
People will say that farming in general, in Columbia County, is dead. And I think that they, especially if they're longtime residents of Columbia County, remember what it was like 20, 30 years ago. And I can remember now, you know, seeing there are a lot of farms that I drive by now that are not being, the barns at least are not being used. And so, you know, one might think that, but dairy farming and farming in general is far from being dead in Columbia County. It's just changing. I mean, the Columbia County farmers are to some extent reacting, but hopefully being somewhat proactive and trying to manage their business to be able to stay in business for years to come. And so there will be a dairy industry, there will be dairy farms here for many years to come. I have no doubt about that. They'll continue to change, and the managers of those farms will continue to adapt to be able to make sure that they stay in business. I mean, I know of farms where the children have come back and are farming at the farm, and their children are interested in coming back and farming. So I'm quite optimistic that we'll still have dairy farms here. It's just that it's not going to look like it did 20, 30, 50 years ago. And I think we may also see, a resurgence in small farms, small dairy farms. Getting back to the thought about artisan cheeses or artisan dairy products, somebody, again, albeit maybe not having a huge lifestyle. And matter of fact, I visited a farm on Long Island. It's only milking 15 cows. It's making cheese down there, you know, and is selling it. And they're living comfortably. I mean, for what they feel is a comfortable living. So we may see some very small dairy farms come back and trying to hit some type of a niche market as well. So, and because of where Columbia County is, we are ripe for that kind of operation to exist here.
Thanks to Aaron and Steve for that really interesting interview. And we're going to turn now to hear from a farming family. Aaron sat down with organic dairy farmer from Greene County. His name is Jerry Cunningham. So we're going to hear from Jerry now.
Hi, this is Aaron Myra. Today we're interviewing Jerry Cunningham of Cunningham Farms, located in Durham, New York. How and when did you and your family first become involved in agriculture?
Well, our farm has been the family since 1837, and it's always been a farm.
This
so
actual
just
farm
one,
right here?
One generation to another, yep. We've expanded it because we bought two neighboring farms back in the 60s, and so we have, it's kind of a combined operation of everything that used to be up here. They've always been involved in farming. My grandfather was actually road superintendent for the town of Durham, and he didn't depend on selling milk for real income then. Everybody was pretty much self-sufficient. They raised what they had to for themselves. They didn't have a commercial market for their milk. But then my father started marketing the milk commercially, and we've been doing it ever since.
And he started milking, what year was that?
He got involved in selling the milk back in the 30s, I think, someday back in there. This, I say, just passed down from one generation to the next. And, yeah.
What have you primarily produced, and how has that market changed over time?
Well, we're depending on income from milk as our source of income. We do sell a lot of hay also to horse people and some dealers, but Milk is the mainstay, and the market has changed tremendously. When my father first started, they had a creamery here in Oak Hill, between Durham and Oak Hill, and he marketed the milk there. Of course, then they had to take it and deliver it in cans, and we stayed cans until I think it was in the late 1950s or early 60s that we changed to bulk, and then it's been bulk ever since. We were in the open market until about 3 years ago when we converted to organic. And that's a different market, but it's sold in the same manner, and that's really been a plus for us. It's organic. It's production is not an answer for everyone, but it certainly has helped us. Yeah.
What do you feel has remained constant in agriculture?
I guess everyday headaches and dealing more. We're just having to deal more with the rules and regulations now, which is not a pleasant thing to have to do, but I guess I understand why, because some people, one rotten apple ruins it for everybody, and that's why we have rules and regulations, but you just don't have the freedoms you used to have, that's all. And it's always been a battle financially. There have been years which were better than others, but overall it is a constant battle just to make ends meet and try to get ahead.
What do you feel has changed the most in agriculture?
Mechanization has probably had more to do with it than anything else. I mean, when I first started with my father, we did most everything with a team of horses. And I have used horses, but I've used them just enough to know I don't want anything more to do with them. I'm not a horse lover. And then gradually it's just been additional equipment. When we first started, for example, when we had horses, all the hay was put up loose and with pitchforks and loaded on a wagon, loose hay. And then we got a baler back in the 1950s. We went in with a neighbor, bought a baler. Then we each went on our own, and finally he sold out and we bought their farm too, but then it was a baler where we had to pick up the bales out of the field by hand. Then we mechanized to the point where we kick them in a wagon. At one time we used a bale stacker, and that worked fairly well, but we just never used it that much, and we finally got rid of it. Don't use it anymore. But now it's our big thing right now is round bales, and they are a tremendous liver saver because we've been able to mechanize the way we feed them in the barn. So that's been a big change, the newest change coming through, and I don't foresee us getting into it, but is using the big square bales. They are becoming popular, especially where people are selling to the commercial market, but I don't think it fits in us right now. And other changes in agriculture, well, electricity was a big change. I remember when our electric service was put in here in 1945. My father had a small generator. He had his own electric system, a 32-volt system, run with batteries and a small generator in a cellar. And then in 1945, the commercial line was put in by Central Hudson. And that's just changed lifestyle entirely and everything. Now we depend on electric motors for everything, and we certainly couldn't do without that at this point. We used to raise corn, but we haven't raised it probably in 25 or 30 years. And I decided to go all with hay, and I don't think there's anything better than good quality hay. We have supplemented with additional corn in our grain, but right now we're being organic. We're cut back as much as we can on cost because of the cost of the grain. Feed is built around hay and bin baleage. corn is necessary for some people, but I just couldn't see the additional investment, and you have to have a whole separate line of equipment for doing silage, and it's expense. So we concentrate on hay and worked pretty well for us so far.
How do you see agriculture in the future, both at a county and national level?
Well, it's unfortunate the way agriculture is going in this country. Our politicians in Washington think we can live on cheap food imported from other countries. And we're losing so many of our farms, family farms, and good farm operations are just getting discouraged because there's no money to be made in it. They want to keep the car. Politicians want cheap food. And they don't care whether we make any living producing it or not. I don't know. And to see a lot of the good farmland that's gone back to bushes and grown up to houses. Some of the people think that when you have housing move in, you're going to have a much broader tax base and the taxes are going to go down, but it works just the opposite. Because when you have agricultural land, there's very little expense for the towns. When you get houses, you've got all kinds of services to provide, and I don't know what the future is going to be, because a lot of people are waking up to see what's going on, but I don't know whether it's too late yet or not. We just can't. We're in a worldwide picture now. It's not national now. It used to be local, and then it just kept going on and on, and I say now we're in a worldwide picture.
Hi, this is Erin Myra here with Krista Lee Skoda. Today we're interviewing Doris Skoda about her involvement in agriculture over the years. How long have you been involved in agriculture?
All my life. I've been on a farm since I was 4 years old. I was born in 1921, so I'm going to be 90 years old in a couple of days.
Now, did you and your husband start this farm originally, or was...
Oh, no. This farm was started... At first, it was a sheep farm years and years and years ago in the 1800s. My father-in-law decided that he's going to have a dairy. So they worked very hard, and they would buy a cow every now and then. So finally, they had 20 cows. And that was a pretty big dairy if you had 20 cows in those days. The farm flourished, and my husband ran it when my father-in-law died. Then he took over. It was tough. It was a hard life, but it was good. It was good. I loved it. I don't know. I know my husband loved being a farmer. The machinery was very simple when I was little. You hardly ever saw a tractor. Nobody had tractors. Everything was done with horses. Horses did the planting. Horses did the plowing. Horses did, no matter what it was, mowing the hay. The horses did everything from the beginning of the farm here. And the way it's run now is so different. No horses anymore. Not like it was. I mean, the horse was number one at the beginning of the 20th century.
Could you tell us what a day was like when you worked on the farm as the farmer's wife?
First of all, you got up about 5 o'clock in the morning, and you had to make sure you had a great big breakfast ready for them when they came in from the barn. I remember my mother-in-law used to make liver and eggs, and your breakfast was about the most important meal of the day. And then you came in noontime and you had your dinner. You didn't have dinner at night. You had your dinner at noontime, which was, I guess it was okay. But that's the way most of farmers lived. They had a great big huge breakfast. They had a huge dinner at noontime. And then at night they would have, you know, maybe if you had a roast of some kind, you had a little leftover for sandwiches.
So you cooked big dinners and you guys had a little time for leisure. Did you have any animals you were responsible for taking care of?
Me?
Yes.
My responsibility were the baby calves. I went to the barn every morning and every night and fed all the baby calves, and I loved it. I couldn't wait to go to the barn every day, get out of the house, and the little calves would go, meh, meh. They would cry when they see me coming. They knew they were going to get something to eat. I took care of the calves, and I also had about 100 chickens. Every day, about 10:30, quarter to 11, I would take a walk across the road, pick up the eggs, and make sure they had water. They had food all the time. They had a big trough, and that was always full of grain and corn and all kind of good stuff. Now, that was my income. When I had the chickens, every Friday I went peddling eggs. I must have had about 10 customers. Some bought one dozen, some bought four dozen for 65 cents a dozen. And you know what? I always had $100 in my wallet.
So over the years, what has remained constant in agriculture?
When you have a dairy, there's always one thing. You've got to take good care of your cows. No matter what happens, you've got to take good care of your cows if you want them to produce the milk that you want them to produce for you. And that's the biggest thing on the dairy farm. Take good care of your cows, because if you don't, they'll drop down on their production. You're not going to have the income that you hope you should have. Yeah, cows are a big deal. I mean, they're a lot of work. You've got to milk them every morning and every night. Some farmers milk them 3 times a day. But we never did. We always milked just twice.
How do you see the future of agriculture?
How do I see the future of agriculture? There has to always be agriculture. Always, forever. If it wasn't for agriculture, people wouldn't eat. It's an unending cycle. Agriculture has to remain forever. You can't live without it. Nobody can. You go in the stores, and the stores are full of food, and they come from all over the world. And years ago, it wasn't like that. Today, it's a worldwide enterprise. Agriculture must be forever. You cannot forget about agriculture, because that is the lifeblood of every community. Everybody has to depend on the farmer for something.
Reality shows about some folks' so-called lives. A pretty girl cries 'cause she don't get a rose, but she'll find love next year on her own show. And they call that real. Real is the hand you hold 57 years. Real is a band of gold trembling. It's the first long tear down an old man's face, watching his angels slipping away. His heart so broke, it's never gonna heal. I call that real. Where I live, housewives don't act like that. And the survivors are farmers in John Deere hats. Our amazing race is beating the check, praying that the bank ain't ran it through yet. Real, like too much rain falling from the sky. Real, like the drought that came around here last July. It's the Dambo Eagles and the market and the weeds, the prayer they pray when they plant the seeds, and the chance they take
to bring us our next meal. I call that wheel. Real, like a job you lose, 'cause it moves to Mexico. Mama and a baby with no safe place to go. Like a little dream house with a big old foreclosed sign. Like a flag draped coffin and a 21 gun goodbye. I call that real, yeah. Man, I call.
And that was the song Real by James Wesley. Before we heard that song, we heard from Jerry Cunningham from Greene County, and then from Doris Skoda, who is the matriarch of a dairy farming family from Columbia County. And now we're going to hear some more from the Skoda family. Erin Myra and Extension Educator Crystalise Skoda discussed dairy farming with Doris's son Richard and his son Ryan, both of whom work on the family farm.
We're here today with Richard and Ryan Skoda from Triple Creek Farms, located in Taconic, New York. Can you please describe your farm for me?
We own just shy of 500 acres, and we're probably working 750 about now. We grow 260 acres of corn. That's for both silage and grain. 220 acres of soybeans. And the rest, mixed hay. I'm third generation, Ryan is fourth, obviously. Grandfather came here in 1922. It's always been dairy. We suffered a barn fire in August of 2006. We went for a year and a half without milking cows for the first time since 1922. And rebuilt this facility, and what we got in herd now, milking and drying, 200.
Well, that's a good lead to the next question. So you're milking, you have a total of 200 cows. How many are you actually milking, and why do you stay at that number?
We'd rather be bigger. We'd rather be milking 250 with 50 dry for a total of about a 300 cow herd would be better at this point. Financial reasons are right now why we don't just buy another 100 cows, and we're working on some things to try to lower our debt load. That's why we're milking what we are right now. We are trying to grow within. We have 150 total young stock, from calves to springers, but there's always a constant turnover within the milking herd. You know, three heifers come in, two cows go out, so it's tough to increase your numbers quickly, but we're working on it.
Can you describe a typical work day?
My typical dirt work day is totally different from his. I've always been, since I was young, I've always kind of been the mechanic around here. It's the same thing my dad had me doing when he ran the place. If something breaks down, everyone calls me. That's my typical work day, is to try to keep everything, maintain everything, fix everything, keep everything moving, keep everything working. That's my typical day. Of course, a month from now, my typical day is going to be planting corn, field work, and keep everything going. Ryan's typical day is a lot different, because he takes care of the herd and breeding, shots,
Do you want to describe your day for us?
Usually my day starts a little earlier, with morning chores.
What time is earlier?
Usually my day starts at 4, with milking and cleaning the barns. After that, the cows are fed. Check all the cows, heifers, calves. Check everybody, make sure it was healthy and doing good. And I just keep the herd running. Take care of any problems that come up. And a month from now, I'll be in the fields too.
And taking care of the cows.
And taking care of the cows.
So work starts at 4. What time does it get over?
Usually we're done by a typical day by 6. Typical day, winter time, we're done by 5:30, 6 o'clock. But once we start spring work, we'll put in some extra hours.
Where do you market your milk, and why do you market it for that reason?
Well, as far as the big picture goes, right now all of our milk is brokered by AgriMark. We are part of a small farmer co-op called Hudson Valley Fresh right now, which bypasses AgriMark's plant in West Springfield, so our milk goes directly to the Boyce plant in Kingston, New York. I can't exactly say why we're part of AgriMark. I mean, it's 40 years ago it was CNPA, and then they were bought out by Yankee Milk. Yankee Milk was bought out by AgriMark, so we've always stayed with the same milk co-op. We've never switched out. I think after hearing some horror stories, AgriMark has a really good track record for being a strong co-op. There were some co-ops that actually have gone out of business, have gone under, leaving their farmers with nowhere to ship their milk. Those were some of the stories from 30 years ago. There was actually farmers in the central part of New York. They were dumping their milk because they had no co-op to pick their milk up. So AgriMark has a good marketing characteristic that continues to make them be strong and competitive.
So you send part of the milk to AgriMark and then another part to Hudson Valley Fresh?
Right now, all of our milk is going to Hudson Valley Fresh. AgriMark picks up any surplus from Hudson Valley Fresh. The Hudson Valley Fresh market is continually increasing, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. So,
what do you feel your farm brings to the community?
Noise, smell. Well, everybody in our community wants to see open farmland. We're providing that. Yeah, our community is, we have a lot of weekend neighbors, and we get along with all our neighbors. And one of the things they love about the area is, you know, driving up and down our road and seeing the cornfields and the open land, and gives them a sense of being in the country. And we do an Oktoberfest every October. It's like everybody knows us. We've been here since 1920, so you ask anybody in the area where the Skoda farm is, and they all know us, they all recognize us, and for the most part, I think they all like having us here, being part of the agricultural community, as they call it.
What are some of the issues, current issues you are facing, and how do you deal with them?
Well, one of the biggest issues with the milk dairy industry in the last 20 years has been an unstable market. You know, we seem to have our highs and lows. It's on a 3-year cycle. 2009 was one of the worst. It's now the all-time benchmark for one of the worst dairy years in history. And now we're riding the curve upward. 2011 looks like it's going to be a decent year. And then 2 years from now, we'll probably be losing money again. So that's one of the issues facing the dairy farmers. The co-ops are trying to work together to provide an even market strategy where we don't have these ups and downs, and we can form better budgets and try to maintain a positive cash flow. So that's the biggest issue facing farms right now. And I think for us also right here in this area, one of the issues I see it's going to get worse as we move forward is the weekend crowd. They love us, but they want to love us on their terms, you know. Some of them have come right out and stopped here at the farm and told us that our manure smells. Can we not spread on weekends? So when they come up on weekends, they don't have to smell it. Don't run your tractors before 10 a.m. on weekends, because we like to sleep in. Put all your equipment at the end of the day so your farm maintains a nice, neat appearance. And of course, we don't. we gotta do what we gotta do when it's gotta be done. So I think the pressures from our weekenders are gonna get worse as the future goes on, but New York has a right to farm, so.
What do you feel would make the dairy industry more profitable in the future from the aspect of the farmer?
More profitable? They have to, somebody has to tackle the issue of taxes, because it's a very sore subject. Right now our taxes are about $30,000 a year. So if you start figuring that out on a weekly basis, it's pretty bad. And why we're taxed so high just on open land, you know, to maintain the schools that are 12 miles away, it's all a complex issue. I really don't know what the answer for it is. But that would be a way to make us more profitable, to regulate taxes somehow for us. And then another thing would be to, like I spoke before, maintain that even keel as far as marketing goes, so we don't have these up and down swings. Advertise more. Advertising has always proven to help. You know, the more dollars we spend per hundredweight on advertising, the more milk we seem to move as far as, you know, overall milk production nationwide goes. But I think the nation is on a health kick too, so that's a good thing. People seem to be drinking more milk and dairy products.
What do you feel is a point of pride for your farm?
One of my points of pride is my family around here, my sons and daughter-in-laws, and everybody gets along. Everybody likes coming down to the barn, and usually if something good happens with the dairy herd, it's usually Ryan's fault, not mine. So I think we try to take good care of our land, which is why a lot of people love driving up and down our road just to see our rolling green fields and take care of our cows. And we do the Oktoberfest, where we should kind of, I mean, we don't show the farm off, but we open our doors to all our neighbors, and everybody seems to enjoy, and it seems to be growing. Now, little by little, it's getting a little bit larger every year. So,
well, I always like bragging that this generation is going on the fourth, and now the fifth generation is starting to grow up.
The fifth generation is on their feet.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, thanks a lot to the Skoda family for agreeing to sit down and talk with us about their dairy enterprise. And they mentioned the dairy cooperative Hudson Valley Fresh. So our final interview today is with Dr. Sam Simon from Hudson Valley Fresh.
Hi, this is Erin Meyer. Today we're interviewing Dr. Sam Simon from Plankenhorn Farm, located in Pleasant Valley, New York. Dr. Simon is one of the founders of the Hudson Valley Fresh Co-op.
Can you please describe what a cooperative is and how it works?
This cooperative is a marketing cooperative. Initially, we started with three farms back in 95. Now we're nine farms. And we're marketing premium milk that is defined by objective standards that are measured at every farm, every other day basis, the milk is picked up, and then monthly, every cow is tested for the quality standards. Every farm's on DHIA test, which is an outside source that tests every cow on every farm. The standards are the following. The raw bacteria count at the farm has to be less than 5,000 in the milk. The upper limit of normal that's accepted in generic and organic is 50,000 per milliliter. The second absolute standard is the somatic cell count has to be below 200,000 for the entire milk from the farm itself, every day, every month. And any farm that joined had to have that standard for 1 year before they could join. Premium quality milk is considered milk with a somatic cell count less than 200,000. These farms run between 49,000 and 160,000 every day. Okay, generic milk organic milk averages around 400,000. That's the difference. We don't dictate how the farmers feed their cows. Every one of these are great stewards of the land. Some feed a lot of hay, some feed a TMR mix, but the bottom line is what's the quality of the milk coming out of the cow and what's coming out of your farm on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And we milk and we market premium quality milk under our own label, and it's processed in a plant, and then no other milk goes in that plant but Hudson Valley Fresh, and that's what makes us unique.
Where is that plant located?
Kingston, New York. Okay. It's the Boyce Brother Dairy plant, and we bring a trail load of milk in every other day. It's just from these 8-9 farms. Now, we do not use all the milk from those farms for Hudson Valley Fresh at this point, so much of it is sold back to Agromark, to which we all belong. That is all but one farm. We developed Hudson Valley Fresh for one main reason, sustainability. The farm, the milk price at the farm, at the gate, or at the mailbox was unconscionable and unsustainable to survive. When we started this back in 05, the price, I think, was around $17 a hundredweight, $16, $17. And in 09, it went as low as $11 a hundredweight, and we know it costs $21 or $1.70 a gallon to produce it raw at the farm. $1.65, $1.70, that's how it translates to a gallon of milk. The farmer's receiving $1.25 for that gallon. How long can he survive? Hudson Valley Fresh guarantees the farmers $1.90 per gallon or $21 a hundredweight. And the co-op is a non-for-profit. So any excess profits at the end of the year is shared with the 9 farmers. The other reason for creating the co-op, number one, was sustainability. Number two, these farms now represent 1,200 milking cows, 5,000 acres of open space. They all are within 25 miles of each other, and the plant's 25 miles from here as well. So the carbon footprint is very small. And when you talk about fresh, that's fresh. This milk doesn't travel hundreds and thousands of miles. And when you realize that the Northeast consumes 45% of the milk produced in this country, Northeast defined as Vermont to Washington and west to Pittsburgh, that whole geographic area, but we only produce 15% of the dairy, tells you how far our milk is really coming from. So this gives a unique opportunity for those who live locally as well as towards New York, which is a big market, to really get fresh, local, premium milk that has a very small carbon footprint.
How do you feel Hudson Valley Fresh has helped local milk producers?
These specific 9 farmers have gained in income. Their investment was small. The average investment was somewhere between $1,500 and $3,000 based on when they joined. The initial was $15,000. I personally put in a lot more money than that, but I had the ability to do so because of a previous career to get this started. Those farmers who started with us in the beginning have received from Hudson Valley Fresh over $50,000 back in their pocket. So that's real help. I don't know any other co-ops giving back $50,000 to a farmer, and we've given it to many. So it's really giving put money in. And the other is creating awareness to the farmer that your consumer is not the tractor trailer that backs into the farm to pick up the milk. We have been lulled into thinking that once the milk is on the truck, it's sold, and that's our customer. That's not our customer. Our customer is the public who buys it off the shelf. And for that reason, the public has to want to buy this product for several reasons. One, supporting their local economy, supporting their local pastoral setting, and be looking at a beautiful farm. So the farm has to be appealing both to the eye, the nose, and the ear. And if it's not, guess what? They don't want to have your product. So those are part of the standards as well. The farm has to be appealing to the public. It's tough to buy paint when you're not getting enough money to just feed yourself. So the fact that Hudson Valley Fresh gives a premium, the realization all these farms are. So it's helped in creating a public, for the farmer to become more aware of the public, who's really a consumer. And it's helped because it's put money in the bottom line.
And most of the milk goes to New York City or locally?
65% of our milk is now going into New York City. We have 3 trucks that distribute locally in a 40-mile radius from here, as north as Hudson, as south as southern Dutchess County, Orange County. But then we have 3 distributors that go to New York City. A couple of them move quite a bit of product down there for us. And we sell directly to the distributor who picks it up directly from the plant. So then that market is 8 million people. So that's a market that's, 90 miles away, and that's a market you have to tap into.
How much milk does each individual producer commit to Hudson Valley Fresh, and what is that demand based on?
Each member commits all his milk, because all his milk is picked up every other day. we, and that's just a couple of us, do the marketing and selling, and whatever we sell goes into that bottle, Hudson Valley Fresh label, they get paid the $21 a hundredweight. That which not sold under Hudson Valley Fresh label but sold at Cabot gets a commodity price. We have an arrangement with Agrimark or Cabot that we can sell as much as we want. We pay a premium for using our own milk, which is essentially class one price we have to pay back to Agrimark. So they pay us blend, but we have to pay $2 extra to use it. So that goes into the cost of the product for us in our bottle. We provide our own bottles, our own labels. We pay the processor a processing fee per unit. So if we process 5,000 bottles one day, it's per unit. He gets paid. If we process 6,000, he gets paid that much more. So it's been a win-win for the processor as well, Boy's family, because we are more than $1 million of revenue to him as well.
What products does the co-op currently produce, and how do you market these products?
We currently produce whole milk, low-fat, skim, chocolate, whole natural chocolate, sour cream, heavy cream, half and half, and ice cream mix, 16% ice cream mix. We market it through word of mouth, through door-to-door hand combat, meeting stores, restaurants, and all of that's been done on a voluntary basis. This whole project was a totally altruistic phenomenon. Myself and two others, Jerry Simonetti and Mark Manning, who are really the workhorses behind this, never got paid a dime, don't want to be paid.
Is the co-op looking to expand its product line in the future?
Yes, we are in the midst of developing a yogurt line and cream cheese.
And that will also be out of the
same plant. Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the future of milk marketing and processing, both locally and nationally?
I can't speak for the national because that's totally out of control. In my mind, it's a monopoly. It's run by a lot of people who are wearing silk suits, whose total mission is profit for them and not for the farmer. And that's the way it's been for 50 years, and it hasn't changed. And because milk is such a perishable item that has to move every other day, the farmer is a prisoner of his own product. I think something like this can be done on a very local level, controlled fashion. Size is critical. Because how far can you move the product if you want to really deliver something fresh and premium? And how many farms are willing to do what we're doing at these individual farms? You saw the farm. You walked in the barn. You know what it looks like. I think it's something that has to be done on a limited basis in a limited geographic area, and it can succeed as long as there's a lot of sweat equity willing to be put in. I've had two farmers call me, one in Kentucky and one in Montana, who started a similar project. And the one in Kentucky is successful. He's doing very well. The biggest thing is for farmers to cooperate and share. The critical thing of this, Hudson Valley Fresh, we have farmers milking 50 cows like we do, and others milking 200. It's not how many cows you milk. Everybody's an equal, but a beneficiary of this project. So I make 1.5 million pounds a year. Somebody that milks makes 10 million pounds of milk a year. He doesn't have 10 times the share in this project. He has an equal, 1/8, 1/9. The reality is, it's just like a stock, and you buy 5 shares of a stock of a big company, you get the dividends equal to the 5 shares. So everybody's an equal beneficiary of this co-op.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget to listen every week at this time for shows on farming. Thanks for listening to Living Lightly on the Land, and I'll see you again at 2 p.m. on August 1st. And we're going to close today's show with the song "Daddy Won't Sell the Farm" by Montgomery Gentry.
Up a hill that's steep, you can't pull roots when they run down. message.